Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
All right, Reds, Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. Liverpool shared the spoils with City, and what a game it was. And the news this week is Michael Edwards is coming back. Well, we'll discuss the latest in the title race and what role Edwards is set to take in the post-Klopp era. But as ever, we'll start with those three words. Si, you're always the man who's ready with those three words. Snappy words, you've got them ready. You've probably got like a list, and you've probably got like 50 or 60 different three words to hit us with. Give us your best.
It is remarkable how often I just forget about this aspect of the podcast, but on my feet, I've just been thinking, and all I can think of is what a game.
What a game. I agree. It was a fantastic game. James, do you concur? And what are your three words?
I do concur. I'm going to go with title hopes enhanced. Because although there was that nagging frustration and a bit of anger at kind of missing an opportunity and also being denied an opportunity to win with what went on late on, I think ultimately to have performed at that level with so many key personnel out and help on the way with the cavalry returning after the international break, yeah. That made me more confident rather than less confident that there'll be the finale we all hope there'll be to this season.
I agree. Let's see what they're saying over at the Walk On Podcast Facebook group. Alan Lloyd should have won. Jane Stacey, outstanding despite injuries. Toby Hone, ref bottled it. Phil Kane, proud but frustrated. You know what? I'm probably going to annoy everyone, every listener. I'm going to say wasn't a penalty.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
Let's talk about that first, James.
Did you think it's not a penalty, Tony?
Yeah, I think it's one of them where if you get it, you go, yeah, that's brilliant, you know, it's a penalty. And if it's given against you, you're like, that was never a penalty. I think it was really soft. My first thought was when I saw it live, oh, there might be something there, they might refer it. And then I watched it back and I was a bit like, oh, you know. If that would have gone against us, we'd be squawking. We'd be screaming. There would be more outrage than you've ever seen. And I'll tell you what, all fan bases are big babies, but sometimes is one of the most infantile. And if that would have gone against us, there'd be rioting in the streets of Anfield.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I saw it differently. I actually thought first time around, live sitting there, I thought, no, that's not a penalty. And then as soon as I saw a replay, I thought, that's nailed on. You can't. It's reckless to have your boot up that high. It is an absolute nonsense when you hear pundits, well, anywhere else on the pitch, that's a free. It's like, well, that's not actually a rule in football, that it's different laws depending on where a challenge is made on the pitch. And Doku made, he was so lucky. He made an absolute hash of that. He didn't fancy putting his head in there. When you have your foot up that high and you catch someone in the chest, I'm not even massively convinced that he actually touches the ball first. I think actually the ball actually hits McAllister marginally before it comes off Doku. And I think just when you follow through like that, you think of, you know, the Curtis Jones one at Tottenham, where even, you know, people say, well, it doesn't make any difference that he's touched the ball because his studs have rolled over it and then caught the player. Well, I don't really see the difference with, even if Doku does get a tiny touch on the ball, it's still dangerous, and he still catches McAllister in his chest. When you're sat there watching Match of the Day 2 and Shea Given, a former Man City goalkeeper, his justification for why it wasn't given was, well, it's not head height. You know, the studs aren't that high. It's like, yeah, that's when you kind of know that I think City massively got away with one there. And I think if that's 20 minutes to go, I think Atwell probably sends Michael Oliver to the screen. But I think they did not want a game of that magnitude, which had been pretty much without controversy up to that point, to end on that note.
So what's your view on it? I mean, for me, it's one of those things where there's too much scrutiny over refereeing, and I can see why they didn't send him to the screen, because when you look at it, you're like, is that like a egregious mistake? As I say, I was like, could have gone either way. It didn't go for us. Well, what are you going to do? Move on.
Right. So it's not the sort of thing that I'm going to get wound up about as a fan. But then you've got to separate yourself from the fan reaction and look, trying your best to look at it objectively, whether it would have, how you would have reacted if it had been given against you, or whether it's given for you. For me, it shouldn't come into it. I just think a chest-high tackle with the player's studs going into the other player that he's trying to challenge inside the box or outside the box, it's a foul, so it's therefore a penalty. Everyone's trying to second-guess, aren't they? The overall conversation around it is, well, what's coming into the referee's thinking? You know, is it inside the box and outside the box? Is it because it's late into the game? None of this should really form a part of the conversation, really. It's either a foul or it isn't. Now, I think what isn't helping at the moment is there's so much focus on the referees, so much focus on the VAR. There's all sorts of reasons why that is the case. I think, you know, there was an article on The Athletic today about sort of why every single set of fans just feels like they're being let down by the referees. Personally, I can accept a referee making an error in a high-pressured situation. I really can. It's a hard job in front of lots of people, and your decisions can cost a club or people lots of money. I wouldn't want to do that role. But I think where the conversation is accelerated about referees is because of VAR, and because I don't want to sound like one of these conspiracy theorists at the moment, but there's so much conversation online about sort of the deep state is out to get you, and these people in the VAR box, you know, they're making these decisions without any sort of responsibility around it. And I just think that as it's all happening in that culture at the moment, where people are paranoid about who's controlling things here. I'm amazed at that isn't given a penalty. You know, the people aren't in control. The people in control of these decisions aren't brave enough to make that call, regardless of who it affects and at what time. They shouldn't be in that position of responsibility, as far as I'm concerned.
The bottom line is that we could have been blown away by City in the first half. They were magnificent when they started, but we come into the game and we were superb. But the reason that we drew is not a referee's decision. It was poor finishing, particularly by Diaz and Salah when they come on. And, you know, I'm not going to slag either of them, because, you know, it happens. But I'll tell you what, we wasted so many chances. And everyone's like pointing at the referee, and it's like, you know what, we should have killed them off. We should have put them to the sword, James.
That was the kind of frustration that lingered, wasn't it, in the aftermath? Because I still think when the dust settles, in the circumstances when you weigh it all up and you think, you know, no Alisson, no Trent, no Konate, no Jota, Jones, Gravenberch, the list goes on, you can't be disappointed with what was served up. But yeah, it could have been better. It was such an unbelievable spectacle. I mean, as you said, Tony, you know, first half, there were times when I thought, oh God, this could be 3 or 4, because City were finding space so easily. Liverpool were going long to try and kind of bypass the City press, but Nunes wasn't able to hold it up, and it kept coming back, and you could see De Bruyne finding little pockets of space. And then and I think also when you give away such a bad goal to get done from a set piece, and it was clever from City, but really naive and you know, lapsing concentration from Liverpool, that, you know, for Stones to be unmarked like he was. But then, yeah, the second half was such a sea change. I mean, sat there afterwards, Guardiola described it as like being hit with a tsunami. He said, you know, it was like, you know, everywhere you look, they were just absolutely all over us. And of course, you know, you get the perfect start to the second half. And then, yeah, that's where the frustration lingers, the fact that there was that 20-minute spell. And yeah, the biggest chance of the lot is undoubtedly that, you know, what a pass that was from Salah to release Diaz. And he just got the finish horribly wrong. And I felt for Diaz a bit, because he was such an unbelievable outlet for Liverpool in terms of the shift he put in. And there was that amazing moment when he took Rodri and Carl Walker almost the length of Anfield and still came out with the ball. But yeah, I think when you look at Diaz's numbers, I think it's 22 goals in 85 games, basically a 1 in 4. And that is an area of his game, which it wasn't just last weekend. It has been a theme that it does let him down at times because, God, if he could finish, he'd be a £100-150 million footballer.
Without doubt, with better composure, Liverpool win that game. The Diaz one being sort of the worst example of the finish, and you could just see straight away his body shape just wasn't right.
And Salah looked so rusty, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, apart from that pass. I mean, if he'd put that pass through and he misses, you're absolutely devastated. I thought it was a wonderful pass from Salah. But despite Liverpool not winning, despite obviously the decision not going their way, I do suspect that it finishes as a positive for Liverpool, really. I think Liverpool, the players will feel a sense of, we should have won, but the second half performance was so strong that gives us confidence going into the back end of the season. Let's not forget that, there's still nearly a quarter of the season to go. It's still a long way to go. I don't think it's a bad result for Liverpool. I think they were outstanding the second half against City, as good as City were in the first half. Classic game between the two teams, as they've been over a long period of time, where ebbs and flows, each team has periods of dominance when you think they're going to blow the opposition away. Liverpool or City hang in, and then, it sort of swings the other way. There was a lot of players on the pitch there who could have claimed man of the match. I mean, there hasn't been near enough conversation about Gerald Quansah's performance. I just think he looks every inch a Premier League footballer. Absolutely brilliant performance from a young player who's very inexperienced in the big games. Just looked composed, dominant, really good. Helps, obviously, when you've got Virgil van Dijk alongside you, I think helps anyone. But I thought he was excellent. So as frustrating as it is for Liverpool, I suspect that a manager like Jürgen Klopp will turn that into a point of motivation. Afterwards, they played well, they didn't win, but it doesn't feel like an opportunity lost as such. It feels like they've actually dominated, certainly for the second half, a world-class team, the best team in the world, and not quite got what they wanted, albeit with the context of not having the strongest team out by any resemblance, really.
James, I mean, we're all thinking now to fit then to the Guardiola-Klopp rivalry, but you know what? By May, we might have everyone back fit. Wembley, the FA Cup final, that could close it out. And if we get everyone fit, obviously, we're going to spank them badly, aren't we? With or without the ref's help.
Yeah, I mean, the way that those two teams are at the minute, you wouldn't bet against it, would you, them meeting again at Wembley? If they don't, and if Sunday does prove to be the last instalment of the Klopp-Guardiola rivalry, certainly in the Premier League, then what a way to go out in terms of... It kind of perfectly epitomised what both of them have brought to English football in terms of the brand of football their teams were playing. The tempo and intensity was on a whole different level, wasn't it? I think that was why, I said at the start, like, you come away thinking, despite the frustration at the missed chances and the anger at the VAR incident at the end, it was a day to enhance rather than damage Liverpool's title credentials, because, we know help's on the way. Trent will be back, hopefully, either very late March or early April. Kanate, thankfully, was only minor after he went off against Sparta. Klopp was saying he's got a decent chance of being fit for Manchester United in the FA Cup this weekend. And then you've got, Jones and Gravenberch not far away, and then Alisson and Jota after that. So, yeah, I think when you look at it, 10 games to go, we know that if Liverpool and City both win their remaining games, then Liverpool are crowned champions. That's it. We know it's probably unlikely to be that straightforward, but that is the scenario. And yeah, I think once Liverpool won at Forest and got that crazy late winner with Darwin Nunez, it suddenly kind of made you think, well, actually a draw against City now is okay. I think if Liverpool had drawn against Forest and then drawn against City, you'd have been thinking, yeah, that's an uphill struggle now. But yeah, to only be off the top on goal difference, knowing that Arsenal have got to go to the Etihad at the back end of March, that's that's still an unbelievable position to be in.
Well, yeah, we don't want to discount Arsenal. Well, I'm going to discount Arsenal.
Do you honestly not think they'll last the pace?
No, I don't. I don't.
You've got it in for Arsenal, Tony. It feels like you just think that they're flaky, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen them quite a bit this season, and I'm not completely convinced.
Well, I where I share your belief is I just think the top and bottom ends of the pitch, I'm just not sure whether they're good enough. Your goalkeeper and your number nine. I just, particularly your goalkeeper, I just think you've got to have a world-class goalkeeper, or a goalkeeper's going to make very, very, very few mistakes, particularly in the part of the season where, you know, the trophies are won. And I'm just not sure whether they've got that Arsenal. I think that I do think they've improved a lot personally, but let's not forget Liverpool won the Champions League, won the title after they went out and signed a £60 million+ goalkeeper in Alisson, who remains far better than anything that Arsenal got.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Have your say and get involved by emailing walk-on@theathletic.com.
The news has come through. Michael Edwards is coming back. Put out more flags. Build a statue to him. Oh, dear. Are people getting overexcited about this? I'm going to come to you first on this, Si. I'm a bit sceptical about Edwards in his new role. I mean, I think there's two Michael Edwards, and we have the pre-Klopp and the post-Klopp. We have the Michael Edwards of Lazar Markovic and Emre Can, and we have the Edwards who worked with Klopp. Now he's coming back. They've given him the keys to Anfield. They've bet the farm on him. Something about it makes me feel nervous.
I can certainly understand why you're questioning the decision, Tony. I think that every decision of this magnitude deserves some sort of investigation around it, because it's a major decision by FSG to recruit him. Let's not forget he's being recruited by FSG and not Liverpool Football Club, but obviously Liverpool will be at the centre of his responsibilities. We've discussed it many times on the podcast, haven't we, about this sort of certainly a Michael Edwards and a version of him before Klopp, and then when Klopp arrives, I just think that his job becomes a lot easier because the manager has such a clear identity of what he wants, so therefore the recruitment becomes much, much easier. When he was working with Brendan Rodgers became very confused, I think, in terms of what he was looking for a player. You know, the tactics sort of changed from being a ball-playing team to a counter-attacking team, back again and then back again, and I just don't think that's any basis for recruitment. I also think as well, you know, this gets overlooked, I think, sometimes. Players wanted to play for Jurgen Klopp as well.
Without a doubt, yeah.
When they signed Virgil van Dijk, people say, well, they spent a lot of money on Virgil van Dijk, but I think Michael Edwards did a good job in terms of the approach around that. But ultimately, if you listen to Virgil van Dijk when he speaks, he signed for Liverpool because of Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Well, not because of Michael Edwards or because of Liverpool. It was because of Jurgen Klopp, and you know, I think a lot his persuasiveness when he meets players counts for a lot. So, I think it's a bit of a shame, really, that Michael Edwards isn't prepared to come back as a sporting director, because that would be a good test for him to discount, sort of to maybe put a stop to this conversation almost. He's still quite a young man. I know he was in the role at Liverpool for a long time, but the indications were, you know, in the weeks before this announcement was made, that he has no interest in being a sporting director anymore. Now, obviously, I wrote an article 10 days to 2 weeks ago about why Liverpool should move on. And there's been a lot of internet debate. I've constantly been reminded of this article. I mean, this will, I'm sure, come out in writing in the next couple of days. But the basis for that article was Michael Edwards was at a conference in late February where he was speaking to people, told numerous people that he had no interest in coming back to Liverpool. Now, there's a lot more that I could say about this right now, but when you're saying that publicly to people, you know, the indication is he's not coming back. So the concern around that time is if Liverpool carried on harbouring these hopes of bringing him back, they either had to, A, change their approach with him and change what they were offering him, whether it's the role and, I guess, the money that they were offering him, or move on and give themselves the room to get the managerial appointment right as quickly as possible, really, because this was drifting. I think a lot of people sort of see football now as this big master plan of everything always working smoothly and decisions being made months ago. And that's not the case with this. You know, Liverpool have had to change their approach with Michael Edwards to get him back to the club. It's going to be an interesting time, I think, ahead of Liverpool, because it's a massive shift from the system that they've had in the last few years where, obviously, it's been very much manager-led.
Yeah, I mean, my view on this is that when Edwards and Klopp worked together, Klopp took the edge off Edwards' inner nerd, and Edwards countered the worst aspects of Klopp's personality in player recruitment. James, next is going to be Richard Hughes. So we're going to be Bournemouth by the Mersey. And you know what? There's going to be Eddie Howe's going to be out of a job before long. We can recreate the Cherries, can't we, at Anfield? I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I don't fill me with much delight recreating Bournemouth up here. But no, I think in the context of like the resources that Bournemouth have had and, you know, establishing themselves as a proper Premier League club, you look at Richard Hughes' body of work, I can see the attraction for FSG, and clearly he is very much kind of Edwards' man. You know, obviously they took a lot of stick, didn't they, for the way that, you know, dispensing with Gary O'Neill and bringing in Areola at the time, and of course, you know, a pretty torrid start to the season, but then, you know, they've kicked on massively impressively since then. That's looked like a shrewd move, and, you know, they're not even in the conversation, are they, in terms of Premier League survival? So obviously expectation levels incredibly different in what's going to be Hughes' new job. But yeah, it's just going to be fascinating. I think the thing with Michael Edwards that, you know, I've had a few dealings with him, not much, because he's obviously, when throughout his time at Liverpool, he shunned the media for the most part, but he was always uncomfortable with this idea that he was some kind of like absolute genius that was everything he touched turned to gold. You know, when he was very keen to talk up, you know, Dave Fallows and Barry Hunter and Ian Graham and all these other people that contribute to it. So yeah, I think because of, obviously, you know, deals for like Salah, and of course Klopp was very, very complimentary in terms of Edwards' input, in terms of convincing him that Salah was the right way to go, and, you know, and the ins and the outs that we all know about in terms of, you know, the importance of that Coutinho money in terms of the transformational signings of Van Dijk and Alisson. So there was, obviously, there was a lot of good work there, but it's, yeah, I don't think it ever sat right, even with him, that he was some kind of just genius that basked in the glory of all that. But it kind of shows, doesn't it, just how highly he is regarded by FSG, the fact that they wouldn't take no for an answer. They kept coming back with new offers. You know, I'm sure, you know, financially, it's incredibly rewarding, as well as clearly giving him the greater responsibility that he wanted, because he obviously didn't want his old job back. You know, he'd made it clear he didn't want to become a sporting director anywhere. He turned down jobs across Europe in the last couple of years, and then of course had centered his attention on this Ludonautics consultancy firm. So it's very much FSG putting their faith in him to oversee this post-Klopp era with bringing in Richard Hughes. And then, of course, you know, I think we talked about it on the pod a few weeks ago. Liverpool had said, we want the structure in place higher up the club before we go and recruit a manager, because we want the manager to be able to see this is who you're going to have to work with. This is how it's going to work. This is going to be the power dynamic. This is going to be the division of responsibilities. And now they're pretty much there in terms of, you know, once Hughes' appointment is confirmed, then, you know, I think we'll see some serious progress made on the new manager.
The big question then, Si, is why did they let him leave in the first place?
Well, Michael Edwards, his sort of rise to power sort of began at Liverpool 2012. It became a public matter that he was leaving the club in 2021. So by the time he eventually did leave in 2022, he'd sort of been, I don't want to say gardening leave, but he'd increasingly not been at the club for quite some time, as he ceded sort of responsibilities over to Julian Ward. So he, according to the contacts that I spoke to around that time, felt that he'd done long enough at Liverpool for a start. I mean, it is a long time, I guess, and that it was time to start something else. But simultaneously, there was also the, you know, quite convincing claims, you know, that Jürgen Klopp had obviously gradually become more powerful at Liverpool, which is understandable given, I would say, given the amount of success that he's had and was getting slightly more decisions in his way. And it sort of felt that Liverpool, the sort of system that they'd built, the trust that they'd built between Edwards, Mike Gordon and Klopp was not quite as stable as it used to be. So it was a good time for Michael Edwards to leave the club. Now, I think that's sort of supported by the fact that Jürgen Klopp announces departure, and within a couple of days, it's been revealed publicly, certainly by someone, that FSG have approached Michael Edwards. So if they were that convinced that they were getting him, you know, I find it very interesting the timing of that. You know, why within a couple of days of Klopp leaving or announcing his intention to leave, that it becomes a public matter that Michael Edwards is one of the candidates that Liverpool want to try and get. The thing is, right, let's have a right. A lot of people will say, oh, you're just trying to sort of create problems where there aren't any. It's like, well, that's not true. I mean, I think you've got to reflect the way things are. And by saying that there's differences of opinion, competitive debates, fallouts, you know, that is the way it is at football clubs. It happens everywhere. Often, you know, it leads to situations like this where one person leaves. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the scandal of the year, but it nevertheless means that it's the reality of the situation, that decisions aren't just made with one factor in mind. There's different things that lead towards any decision. And the reality is, you know, Jürgen Klopp, since he's been at Liverpool, there's been a huge turnover of staff, which that's what it's taken to get Liverpool to where it is now. That's the reality of it. But it nevertheless remains the reality that, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's the easiest person to work with all of the time. You know, he's a very demanding manager who has his own way of thinking and can be very persuasive and, as I said, becomes more powerful over time. Now, Liverpool are trying to almost reset to the position that they were at the start of the relationship with Klopp and Edwards, where it was more of consensus built. Albeit, the one thing we haven't really spoken about is what this all means for Mike Gordon. That remains really unclear. And
well, it seems to me that he's most likely to step away and Edwards will be taking that role.
That would be the indicator. That would tally with some of the things that I've been told over the last year to 18 months, really, you know, which has been difficult to verify. I mean, FSG, despite sort of, well, not FSG, but Mike Gordon, despite taking on a more prominent role, I wouldn't say he's certainly not been a public role. He's never spoken publicly directly to anyone. And I think what you've got to remember here is when Mike Gordon sort of rose to prominence, it wasn't this big announcement, you know, that FSG made that Mike Gordon's in charge of Liverpool. It was just sort of almost fed through the media over a long period of time that Mike Gordon was having more of a say. So they've always sort of operated in this very sort of quiet way. I think certainly what changes now is if Michael Edwards is this significant figure who's got this overarching sort of role at Liverpool, it's going to be really interesting to see how he operates that, whether he tries to do it the same way as Gordon or whether he becomes slightly more front-facing. I suspect he'd sooner sort of be operating in the background. But it does seem the messaging around this seems to relate to more decisions being made in Liverpool than in Boston. So in that case, he's going to, in theory, face a bit more scrutiny around those decisions.
James, all right, you're sitting in Leverkusen. You're looking over Merseyside. What are you thinking?
I mean, it's difficult, isn't it, to get inside the mind of Xabi Alonso. I don't know him well enough for that. I would have thought, if anything, it would be a positive because continental managers in general have always kind of been a lot, certainly to a greater extent than kind of British ones, have embraced the sporting director model. I don't think there'd be any sense from Alonso of like, or, you know, there's a big powerful figure coming in there. You know, am I going to be able to have full control? Because I don't think that is would even be on Alonso's agenda. I think in terms of kind of like, you know, he wants to be able to focus. If he doesn't take the job, his impact is obviously on being on the training pitch, coaching, the tactical side of things. So surely you would only see it as a positive, I think, that someone who was so instrumental in what was a really successful period in terms of recruitment in Liverpool's history. And yes, of course, there's the big unknown. It's so difficult to quantify because the Klopp factor in terms of making everyone better that he's ever had. But I think surely anyone who's in the mix for the manager's job would feel a lot more reassured the fact that this structure is now coming together. Because I think when the initial approaches were made and you were looking at it and you were thinking, well, there's a proper massive void there with Klopp going, his coaching staff all going, no sporting director, you know, Mike Gordon, you know, still in charge of the day-to-day running of the club, but, you know, basically from Boston. So I think the fact that now it's all coming together and you can kind of see what you'd be walking into, I think that would provide a lot of clarity for someone like Xabi Alonso. And as always, so I think if it comes down to a straight choice between Liverpool and Bayern Munich, then I'm convinced Xabi Alonso picks Liverpool. I'd be absolutely amazed if he went to Bayern ahead of Liverpool.
You're listening to Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic.
Well, two games coming up. Two big games. And I'll come back to you on this, James. Sparta Prague at Anfield on Thursday night. Klopp played a fairly strong team in Prague. And oh, by the way, how was Prague? What were the beers like? Did you have a good time? Because we talked at length about it last week.
It was a great trip. Yeah. I'd forgotten what a fantastic city Prague is. I hadn't been for about 15 years. Yeah, it ticked all the boxes for a European away.
Did they have a KFC there? And, you know, I mean,
do you know what? I didn't have a KFC. No, I stayed very true to, in terms of local delicacies.
Well, I'm glad about that because you
go on, tell us about that.
You were about to get, like, beaten up if you would have gone to KFC.
I think on the first night, I had a lovely big hunk of lamb on this, like, bed of kind of mashed potato with onions and this nice gravy. And then I had some goulash as well another time. Oh. So it was...
You never sent me any beer pictures though, James.
Sorry about that. But yeah, the Pilsner Urquell was absolutely delightful. It's such a beautiful city. And also, do you know what? The ground is walking distance from the city centre. It was only like 15, 20 minutes. And yeah, the people were so, you know, friendly. You know, the atmosphere was brilliant in there, but yeah, just without a hint of trouble. That was a nice thing. And I've got mates who went over there for the trip and, you know, you could have a beer at your seat. You know, there was no issues outside the ground with getting in and out. You know, Sparta fans were passionate, but they were also just absolutely buzzing about having Liverpool in town. And it was funny because before the game, I spoke to a few local reporters. And of course, Sparta, top of the Czech league, unbeaten at home all season. They were pretty bullish, especially when they knew obviously the injury situation and clinging to the hope that Liverpool would have one eye on that game against Man City. So it was let's just say it was a lot more one sided than they'd anticipated.
Yeah, and you know what? So we're just envious, aren't we?
I'm very envious, yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, the game's a bit incidental, really. Albeit a 5-1 victory, pretty impressive, I would say, in the circumstances. But James just describing it there, it was like listening to Alan Wicker, wasn't
he? It was, you know what I mean? For all the youngsters out there, Alan Wicker was a television personality who did travelogue shows back in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, I mean, he looks a bit like Alan Wicker. But, I mean, Klopp went fairly strong, which surprised me, and got the results. Now it means on Thursday he can play, I don't know, you?
Nobody wants to watch that, Tony. Yeah, I mean, he's obviously got more players back now, hasn't he? So he can probably lead with the kids a little bit more, I would say. It's definitely, I mean, winning by that margin away from home is massive. Albeit, the away goals doesn't matter anymore, does it? So it's not really relevant in that sense. But, you know, I think that ahead of the Man United game on Sunday, people will say, well, is it as important, the FA Cup? I think it really is an important game. I think if Liverpool were to go there and win, the confidence that it would give them off the back of last weekend, winning at Old Trafford, certainly going into another league game, you've got to go there in the league next month. I think it's a really important game. That's so I'm sure Klopp will still field a reasonably strong team, possibly in the first half against Sparta Prague, and then uses full a complement of substitutes with an eye on what happens on Sunday.
Yeah, James, you're expecting such a good experience in Manchester because they're so welcoming to us, aren't they? And you know, and the food's great there as well. And you know, the ambience, the beer. You know, it's going to be no.
I'm looking forward to Sunday in a different type of way because 9,000 Scousers at Old Trafford's going to be some sight, isn't it? And you watch United play, and even I know they've actually had some half decent results, haven't they, the last couple of months, and they are on the fringes of the top four race. But you know, when you watch,
but they're rubbish, aren't they? They're rubbish.
Well, your words, just in case they come back to bite us. But I mean, they're very average. I mean, if you want the complete and utter contrast of like taking on Man City, you look at how passive they were against City, just waiting for like a slow, painful death against City in the Manchester Derby, compared to Liverpool's energy and tempo and intensity and combative approach on Sunday, absolute chalk and cheese. And you just hope Liverpool go there and play to their capabilities, because if they do, they win. And of course, we've still got to go there again in, you know, next month in the Premier League title running. So those two games are going to play a big part in terms of shaping the season, because I go along with what Si said. I would hate to like see Liverpool go out the FA Cup. I know there's bigger fish to fry, but you just think, you know, you get past this, you know, you're back at Wembley. You know, I want that week at the end of May where we have Wolves at home, you know, potentially with the Premier League title being up for grabs on the final day, a midweek trip to Dublin in the Europa League final, and then the FA Cup final at Wembley. You know what? it wouldn't get much bigger than that. And it works out perfectly for Klopp, the fact that he can really ring the changes on Thursday night. You're right, he went a lot stronger in the first leg than I thought he would do. But of course, the reward of that is that the tie is effectively over, despite, you know, he'll have to trot out the usual thing about treating them with the utmost respect and it only being half time, blah, blah, blah. But I'm sure we'll see James McConnell and Bobby Clark and Tsimikas and Lewis Kumas probably even, you know, Gakpo probably needs a game. I'd even be tempted to chuck Adrian in goal because, you know, it's probably going to be another month before we see Alisson Becker back between the posts. So why even take any kind of risk with Kelleher, who's been absolutely sensational in the absence of Alisson? So, Sunday's big because it's also the last game for a fortnight, isn't it? You know, Liverpool don't play again until after the international break. So you just want that momentum to be maintained.
And so the thing is, like, you know what? I could buy the, oh, you know, let's not talk about the quads. Let's put out a weakened team because, you know, as James said, there are more important things to look at. But United, isn't it?
It's a, the Cup as well, the FA Cup. It's still important. Like, I don't know, maybe I've sensed over the last sort of 5 or 6 years, I'm not saying that the FA Cup is back in the way it was in the, like, sort of the 90s, but I think people are realising now, certainly fans of other clubs, are realising how bloody hard it is to win a trophy, you know? So,
but there are only four you can win, you know?
Exactly.
And don't give me the Community Shield. There's only four you can win. And if you win one of them, you're doing all right.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it's not the competition that it was, but it remains a prestigious competition which you want to win. And if you're playing Man United, as James, I mean, I suppose the, regardless of when how the fixtures have fallen and the fact that Liverpool won't be playing for a little while afterwards, I just think it's a game of huge importance for Liverpool. They want to go there and really put on a show. Particularly, you know, they played badly there last year, didn't they, at Old Trafford? I know it was a long time ago. But they have had bad performances at Old Trafford. It's been strange under Klopp. They've either played really, really well and blown them away or abjectly in a lot of situations. And with an eye on the league game next month, I think they want to go into that flying with confidence with Old Trafford fear and what's to come, you know, in what is inevitably going to be one of the games that defines where the title ends up. So, and the, as James mentioned, the other element of it is that the amount of away fans that you can get in the FA Cup. I think the last FA Cup tie at Old Trafford was the return of Kenny Dalglish in 2011, which I remember being at. And that would have been such a great occasion. I'd see him, Gerrard not got sent off after about 3 minutes. So, yeah, there's that element to it. I'm sure a lot of fans who will be there on Sunday will be sort of thinking about that a little bit. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it should be a really good game.
Do you know what? I think Old Trafford will be scouse on Sunday. Can you imagine our hordes in there making all the noise? And say, you're right, we want to send fear through Manchester United, but not just Manchester United, through the whole of Manchester by putting United to the sword and make City think, well, these fellas are serious, even more serious than we saw at Anfield. To Old Trafford and to victory. And that's it from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James and Simon for joining me, and you too for listening. And remember, it's never, never a throwaway game against United. Come on, you Reds!
The Athletic.